Welcome to another edition of Time for Forgiveness, the show that not only teaches you how to forgive, but also gives you compelling guests who share their stories on how they found the path to forgiveness. Now, please welcome your hosts. Here are Kelly and Bob Pascuzzi.
Welcome to another powerful episode. It's time for forgiveness. Now, we've got another incredible special guest this week, and we are so blessed to welcome New York Times bestselling author, nationally acclaimed speaker, thought leader, world influencer. Ladies and gentlemen, we're blessed to have Tommy Spalding with us today. And I'm Sean Parr. Bob and Kelly Pascuzzi are co-host today. And guys, why don't you go ahead and welcome Bob,
Absolutely.
Our incredible guest.
It's my pleasure. So, Tommy, we became acquainted with you in the Fort Lauderdale airport back in January, and Kelly and I were traveling through on vacation, and she was led to and compelled to pick up your book, and I was like, well, I need one too. You can't just have your version. So we got on the plane. We started reading. We couldn't put your book down, The Gift of Influence. And so I want to start there, if we may. And I want to just go right into the front of the book, because you hooked me in immediately right from the first page. You started telling the story that, you know, there was a period in your life that you felt lost, no hope. Yeah. In fact, not able to see the good in people. You described it, the emotions of cynicism, deception, and hate. And it was really the culmination, the intersection, as you described it, of three perfect storms coming together.
Yeah.
And and this really had you off kilter, if you will, and to the point that on this particular day you were on a Southwest flight and you were wishing the plane would just crash and it would just be over. And one thing led to another, and then I'm jumping to Jill coming in your bedroom on your 50th birthday, and how you were kind of at the low of lows, but then something happened, and that's where I'd love to pick it up. And if you kind of take it from there and tell our audience what happened at that point on your 50th birthday, and then how did that change the trajectory of your life from that point?
Yeah. Oh, what a way to start the podcast.
Welcome, by the way. Yeah.
I came this close to not writing that chapter in the book because it's so personal. And my editor at Random House really said, Tommy, this, if you share this story with the world, it will change hearts. And so I'm glad I did. But it was my first time in my life where I was really going through a really tough time doubting people. I was getting sued and by some wrong people. And so I used to say, you know, bad people were doing some bad things to me. But it was really more, as I've matured, it's more broken people were doing some bad things to me. And I was at a crossroads, and I just wished that plane would crash because I didn't have the gut to put a gun to my head because I have three young kids. And so I got home that night. First of all, I felt lots of shame because I was wishing my life to end. And I got up that morning, and I couldn't get out of bed. I was so depressed, and I was really probably the most depressed I've ever been. And my wife knew her husband was going through a tough time, and she jumped in the room. And it was an early morning, and she was dancing on the bed with balloons that said "Happy 50th birthday," and she was, you know, putting the Bluetooth music on of the Beatles. You know, it's your birthday. You know, it's rock and roll. My wife's a huge Beatles fan, so she's jumping up on the bed singing "Happy Birthday," and I look up to her, and I just basically said, "Jill, it's June. My birthday's not until August." And she says to me, "No, Tommy, today is 50 days before your 50th birthday. And I'm going to give you one of these every day for the next 50 days. And what that was a letter from my mom on someone that I've had a hard time forgiving in my life. And it was the most beautiful letter I've ever received from my mom, who told me she loved me and how proud she was of me. And it just made me weep. And for 50 days up to my 50th birthday, my wife reached out to people around the world that loved me. That I changed her life and had an impact in her life. And each one of those letters, Bob, each one of those heartfelt letters just warmed my heart and made me forgive more and made me love more and be less cynical and less angry and less depressed. And by my 50th birthday, I was really healed. And the joke that I always give is I asked for a Porsche for my 50th birthday, and my wife did not give me a Porsche. She gave me something more important. She gave me the gift of influence. And that's why I named the book The Gift of Influence, because that's a gift when you can give people the influence to lives of others.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, talk about powerful. What a great way to start the podcast.
Yeah. I think the podcast just ended. That's how powerful.
We could stop right there. Thank you so much and have a great afternoon.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you had used the term the fog had lifted. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great metaphor or picture I can get in my mind, where sometimes we do just we enter into a fog, and it starts, I believe, with wrong thinking. Mm-hmm. And then that can manifest in so many different ways if we internalize those thoughts. And it sounds like that was the thing that you were dealing with, Tommy, and you were able to turn that around because you started to change the way you look at things. And Wayne Dyer had a great quote. He said, when you change the way you look at things, the things you're looking at change.
Amen.
And we can do that. We can make that choice, and thank goodness for Jill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to jump in. I have so many favorite parts to your book that personally spoke to me and in very emotional, personal ways. But one of the stories that I think every listener needs to hear, because you start out saying, how have you heard of an unforgettable story? And I think everyone has a story, but sometimes we don't think our story is very important. And you said they make us fundamentally rethink our assumptions. And I think that's the basis really for this podcast, is people coming on with their inspiring stories, and then they help listeners consider, you know, maybe my story is worth telling, or maybe I could let go of something. They change the way we see and treat other people. They change the way we live and lead. And what's really cool is it kind of changed my perception of influence, because it's not telling people how great they are. It's showing how great they are. And some people may have not ever been shown in their life how great they are. So I would love for you to tell the story. It's so powerful, and I don't know, about Miss Lynn.
Oh, are you going to make me cry now?
I'm going to. I mean.
Strike one, strike two.
A 1-2 punch. It's probably my most favorite story. And it's actually the reason why I wrote the book, The Gift of Influence, was years ago. Kelly, I heard that story about Mrs. Lynn. And when I heard that story, it moved my heart in such a way that it moved yours and others, that I knew I wanted to write a book on the power of influence. Because influence today is, you know, social media and how many, you know, clicks you get and how much, you know, social media hits you have and how many pocketbooks or bottles of tequila you can sell on the internet. Mm. And so I really wanted to hijack that word influence back, the influencer. To be an influencer is changing people's lives. It's not selling tequila and pocketbooks on the internet. It's making a difference in people's lives.
Yeah, thank you.
True story of a teacher, an eighth grade teacher that taught eighth grade algebra in a little town outside Lincoln, Nebraska. And it was a Friday afternoon. It was the early 1960s, and she was about to teach algebra. It was the last period of the day, and it was not just the last period of the day, but it was the last period before spring break was about to begin. So we're like 50 minutes away from spring break, and 36 eighth graders are walking into class, bouncing off the walls, and the sun is out, the windows are open, the sun's shining, and these kids are, you know, 50 minutes away from spring break. So, you know, Mrs. Lynn realized she wasn't going to be teaching algebra that day. So she pulled an audible and told everyone to take out a piece of paper. And she grabbed a piece of chalk and she wrote all 36, you know, names on the board. And she said, I want you to write down all your classmates' names on a piece of paper, all 36 of them. And for the 50 minutes, I'd like you to write one kind word about each one of your classmates. And so the students respected Mrs. Lynn, and they wrote one kind word about each one of their students. And the bell rang, and the kids went to spring break. And what Mrs. Lynn did during spring break is she took out 36 blank pieces of paper, and she wrote everyone's first name on each piece of paper, and she transcribed all 36 beautiful words to each and every one of their students. And she couldn't wait to give the papers back the week later. And anyone have an eighth grade kid, which I've had three of them, and you've had three of them as well. You know, it's an awkward time, eighth grade. You're trying to figure out who you are.
Yeah,
you're popping
sure.
fits. You're, you know, figuring out yourself, self-identity. And so she couldn't wait to bless these students. Following Monday came, and everyone rolled in her algebra class. She passed out those 36 pieces of paper. And for minutes, she marveled on these kids, you know, reading this piece of paper with 36 beautiful words about them. And she said, you know, students were, you know, smiling and blushing, and some people were wiping back tears. And it just was really a moving moment for her. Anyway, she told the kids to take away the piece of paper and take out their algebra book. And she never talked about that piece of paper or that exercise ever again. And so fast forward now, like 6 years later, she gets a phone call. It's now the late 1960s from a high school student teacher that's high school principal down the street. And it was a phone call that no teacher or parent ever wants to get. It was the principal telling Mrs. Lynn that her former student, Mark, who went on to high school, became quarterback of the football team, captain of the football team, was drafted in the Vietnam War, and was killed. And was the first fallen soldier from that community in outside Lincoln, Nebraska, to be killed in the Vietnam War. And they were hosting a church service, and they were inviting all Mark's former teachers to attend. So, of course, Mrs. Lynn went, and she goes to the funeral. It was very powerful, and she was walking out of the church after the funeral towards her car and runs into a few teachers that decide they're going to head over to Mark's house to celebrate his life. They got invited to the after-service party, and she's in the kitchen eating sponge cake, just kind of listening to all the people talk about Mark, how what a great kid he was. And a gentleman walks up to her and says, "Are you Mrs. Lynn? Are you Mark's eighth grade math teacher?" And she says, "Yes, I am." And he says, I'm Mark's father. There's something I want to give to you. Can you follow me?" And so Mrs. Lynn follows Mark's father down the hallway, last room on the left. She walks in. Within seconds, she's in Mark's childhood bedroom. And she's got goose pimples. She's like seeing all these football trophies and pictures of famous athletes, you know, quarterbacks on the wall, and Cornhusker Duvet on there. She knows she's in Mark's childhood room, which gives her just such an eerie feeling. But she sees this camouflage helmet at the bottom of the bed, and she just was staring at this helmet, and it was almost like Mark's father can read her mind. So he goes over to the bed and picks up the camouflage war helmet and hands it to Mrs. Lynn. And Mrs. Lynn doesn't understand why Mark's father is giving her his war helmet. And it was almost like Mark's father can continue hearing her thoughts. So he says to her, "Flip it upside down." So she takes this camouflage war helmet and flips it upside down. And in the rubber bands that hold that helmet to a soldier's head was a six-year-old yellow stained Scotch tape crumpled piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And she opened up that piece of paper, and it was her handwriting at the top that said Mark, with 36 beautiful words about him. Mm-hmm. And Mark's father looks at Mrs. Lynn and says, "You were more than a math teacher. You had a huge influence on my son's life. You've had a huge influence on his life." And when I first heard that story, I can't even tell it without getting emotional, because I want to have that kind of influence on the lives of others. And I'm sure everyone that's listening to your amazing podcast wants to have that kind of influence on the lives of others. And what's stopping us is just our intentional actions every morning. That we have such an opportunity to change so many lives every day, if we want to.
Well, wow. And Tommy, I'm so glad that you shared that particular story. And we're all wiping away tears. And that's the greatest thing about your book, though. When you read your book and you get into how many times in your book your life was changed by your aunt, for instance, when you're 8 years old and she comes over and she's got this suitcase that you're trying to get out of the trunk. Yeah. And you're like, you've got so many clothes. And I'm not even going to say what was in that suitcase. Yeah. I would like you to share. And we're getting into just pieces of this incredible book. Yeah. But you have to share that story as well, because these are all so incredible on how you can influence all of us.
Yeah. I grew up Catholic. And so my dad had one sister growing up, and she was Aunt Orly, older sister, and she became a Catholic nun. And I always thought it was cool to have an aunt that was a Catholic nun. But she wasn't just any nun. She gave her life to serve the poor. She spent most of her 60 years as a nun in Africa. in West Africa serving the poor. And when I was about 8 years old, I guess, it was her first time heading over to Liberia to serve. She was over there for 20 years. And she took a taxi to our home and spent the night before we took her to the JFK airport to fly to Africa. And my job was to take her suitcase in the house. My mom and dad said, go get Aunt Laurie's suitcase, or Sister Lorene, we called her. And I got her suitcase, and it was so heavy. Her suitcase weighed more than me. I couldn't even get it in the house. And I say to my Aunt Laurie, Aunt Laurie, this suitcase is huge. Like, what's in it? And we open it up, and, you know, it's with medical supplies and, you know, soccer cleats and, you know, school utensils. There's nothing personal in there. No personal items. And so my aunt says, well, I'm going to Africa and all I got is the clothes on my back, but everything in the suitcase I'm giving to the poor. And I just remember hearing that, like at 8 years old, wow. You know, really understanding what unconditional love, what giving, what being unselfish, what servant leadership looks like. Having a woman go to Africa for 20 years with one suitcase and every single thing is, there's not even a freaking toothbrush in there for herself. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is just to give to others. It just put a tattoo on my heart forever, and I'll never forget her. She's still alive. She's in her 90s now.
Oh, God bless her. That's
unfortunately,
amazing.
Unfortunately, she's kind of lost her mind lost her memory, and she's in a nursing home. But I think if anyone's going to be a saint after Mother Teresa, it's going to be Sister Lorene.
And the way you tell that story in the book is so eloquent, and there's so much more to it. But just it's almost like books on tape, just listening to you talk about it, which I think is so phenomenal. But that's just one of many stories that you tell that influence. You share the stories that influenced your life, but you also influence all of our lives.
Mm. Oh, no doubt about it. And Tommy, one of the words you used just a minute ago, I want to go back to it because it's very important, I think, is you mentioned intentional. And intentionality is so critical in our lives, I think, that we just don't wake up every morning. We're just on autopilot.
Yeah.
And we're reacting instead of responding.
Mm-hmm.
And you set out in your book some great ideas for people on how they could be more intentional around the idea of influence into the fact that this you know, stadium concept. I love the picture that it immediately forms in the reader's mind that we all have the ability to influence somewhere 70, 80,000 people or more, mm-hmm. certainly more. But what would happen if you knew you're going to pass on and you're going to walk into that stadium, Arrowhead Stadium here at Kansas City, holds 80,000 people.
Sure.
That was the image I immediately went to in my mind. I'm walking into Arrowhead Stadium. There's 80,000 people here that are either going to cheer me, you know, boo me or whatever. And it's like, bang, that really made me think. And am I doing enough? Because there's always more that we can do when we're intentional about our actions. So I appreciate you bringing that to the forefront in your book.
Okay, but Tommy said the word intentional, and then you said the word react. And there was a part in your book where you said sometimes relationships boil down to how well you react in a single moment.
Yeah.
Sometimes we think it's over a pattern or a period of time, but it's actually in a single moment.
Yeah. Kelly, I think we do, as humans, we're so good at running towards good. Like when our relationships, people in our lives, whether they're friends or family, customers, clients, employees, just all the our entire network of people, the thousands of people we know, when good things happen, we run towards it, like Christmas cards or anniversary cards or birthday cards, or if their kid graduates college. My son's about to graduate West Point. What a cool thing! Like you want to run towards, congrats. You know, success. Congratulations! You sold your company. Your 50th wedding anniversary. Like we do so well at following up and running towards the good, but we really fall short as humans. What I call running towards pain. And that's what matters. That's what influence matters. Everyone can send birthday, Christmas cards, and congratulations on graduations and all that kind of stuff. But when your friends and family and coworkers and clients and customers are going through pain, we just get awkward. We don't know what to say. But when my 50th birthday happened and my wife put together this dinner, we only had about 20 people around the table. My best friend from high school, Corey Torr, I grew up with him. I mean, played Little League and, you know, junior high school, and still talk to him every week for the last 30 years. He gets up at around the table and everyone around the table and kind of said a toast to me. And he could have said a thousand things, a thousand funny stories. Instead, he said, when my wife left me and had an affair and left me with three boys as a single dad, it was miserable. And my self-confidence was in the toilet. And my best friend, Tommy Spaulding, called me every day for a year to tell me how much he loved me and how much I'm a special guy and my best days are ahead of me every day. That's what matters.
It does matter, because you had even taken it a step further, and it really relates to me, because you had said it's, as a society, our natural instinct is to look the other way.
Yeah.
When we see someone suffering and in pain. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's just, I think as a society, it's,
yeah,
we tell ourselves it's so uncomfortable, and then it becomes uncomfortable and we avoid.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a speech in Iowa a couple of years ago, and Lori Schaefer, who runs this incredible company, plastic company in a little town called Fairfield, Iowa, she invited me to talk to her staff, and she introduced me. Instead of reading some, you know, boring bio of all my books I wrote or what my accomplishments are and blah, 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 she said, when I had cancer a couple of years ago, I had a drive from Fairfield to Des Moines, a 2-hour drive every Monday for 12 weeks to get chemotherapy. And Tommy Spaulding called me every Monday at 8 o'clock and talked to me on my drive to chemotherapy. He never missed it. That's how she introduced me. I mean, those are the things that people remember. They're not going to remember birthday cards or anniversary cards or, you know, Christmas presents or whatever. They're not going to remember that stuff. Everyone does
that. But why do you think you don't look the other way? Why are you comforting and going to the pain, and you're willing to go there? I guess I want to know that. Was it something that happened in your life? Have you always been programmed that way? Like, why are you willing to embrace it?
Wow, that's a great question, Kelly. And my first reaction to the answer is all the time in my life when I had pain, like deep pain, whether it's depression, loneliness, self-doubt, you know, just a lot, you know, just a lot of tough things have happened in my childhood. I had to overcome a lot of obstacles. And when I was in my darkest moments, that's when I felt like I was the most alone. And even people that loved me really weren't there for me during the toughest times. And so I guess I do send Christmas cards and birthday cards. I still do the good stuff, but I really like to run towards pain because I think that's when people need it the most. So I have a deep empathy. So when I have friends and family that are going through a tough time, you know, I'm the one that wants to step up and get people through that tough time. I get more joy out of that than, you know, celebrating people's successes.
Wow.
Yeah, I love that. Well, and you know, this whole podcast, Tommy, was kind of born out of a very painful period that Kelly and I went through, a period of our life, and it was very tragic and just very painful. But we started to shift too and thought, you know, how could we turn this pain into some type of purpose? Mm-hmm. And when you start with intention, like you said, the Lord has intervened. I mean, this is over a decade, this journey that Kelly and I have been on. But there's always the step is next. Like, you'll see the next step on the rung of the ladder if you just have the courage to go forward and know that God wants you to win. Everybody out there needs to know that the Lord wants you to win, even in your darkest moments. And sometimes we can't see that, but you're a shining example of that. Can I pivot and just go back to a second here at the beginning of the podcast? You had mentioned that, because again, the podcast is all about forgiveness. You had mentioned that you were having a hard time with your mother. Mm-hmm. Is that something you could share for our audience, just for their edification, on how you move through the relationship with your mother and needing to forgive?
Yeah. You know, when I told my wife that I'm jumping on a podcast and it's called Time for Forgiveness, she chuckled and walked away.
Okay.
My wife is in, you know, reading the Bible in the year. She's in the Word 2 hours a day. It's like she's a full-time PhD student. I'm married to a full-time Bible study person. She's just so into the Word. And it's so awesome being married to someone, you know, with such deep faith. But she chuckled because God has got humor, because of all the, you know, the great qualities that I have, forgiveness is not one of them. I'm half Italian, half Irish, and I hold grudges, and I have a hard time with forgiveness. I really do. And when you asked me, Bobby, to be on your podcast, can I just be totally honest how I felt when you asked me? I remember going to a concert like years ago, like I was in high school, college. Bruce Springsteen is like one of my favorite, you know, singers. And I also like Don Henley, the lead singer of the Eagles. And I remember those two concerts, probably my two favorite singers. And both those concerts, they sang about half the time. And then the other half, they just rambled about politics. I mean, literally, like, it was like a political speech. And I was like, I paid money to hear you sing Born to Run and, right. you know, End of the Innocence, not like share your politics. And I just don't think musicians should get up there and share their politics. It's just like, I want to hear your music, not your political views. And so I almost feel like that guy, because even though I've written books on leadership, forgiveness is not the thing I should be talking about. And I feel like such a hypocrite being beyond this on this podcast, because I'm like the world, I'm really working on that. And that's why I think my wife chuckles, because when you're not good at something, God makes sure that you get good at that by giving you a lot of opportunities to forgive.
Yes.
My mom being one of them, you know, she grew up, you know, poor Italian, never went to high school or college until I was, you know, older later in life. And she was strict, and, you know, she kind of ruled the house with the wooden spoon and was very, you know, verbal and strict. And, you know, I could never please her. And today, you know, I can't even, you know, the other day, my kid said something that kind of broke my heart. My 16-year-old and an 18-year-old said, "Daddy, we've never touched your hair. We've never know what your hair feels like." And the reason why they said that is, since they were born, they knew that they could never touch Daddy's head. No one could touch my head. If someone touches my head, even if it's just a little tick, like a little poke, not just hitting your head, but just a tiny unwanted touch. My mom hit me over the head so many times with a wooden spoon. I have so much PTSD that I just get trauma, and I literally have a migraine headache the rest of the day. And the only way to get over that is to drink a lot of alcohol or go to bed. And so I just can't get hit in the head. And if my kids ever touch me in the head, they know the game's over. Like, and just to have a life that every time I go to a restaurant, I always want to know what table I'm sitting at, because I don't want people to bang my head. Every situation, I'm always thinking about who's going to hit my head. And it's just an awful way to live. And I still deal with that. And it's all mental. It's all in your head. And so my mom was tough on me. But my mom is a grandmother, and she's unbelievable. I mean, she's like unbelievable with my kids. And so I've had to find a way, you know, I've had to find a way to forgive her, you know, and just know that that's what her mom did to her. Her mom beat her up and, you know, was mean and pinched her and smacked her over the head with wooden spoons. And that's how the Italians did it back then. And, you know, and I'm sure her mom did that to her mom's. And so it's just a generational thing. But, you know, I love my mother. But I don't want to be like kind of parent. I've never hit my kids. I've never touched my kids and parent them in a very different way. But I've learned to forgive my mom and see her heart and know that a lot of who I am today, the good stuff, came from, you know, the great qualities that she gave me. Thanks Absolutely. For asking that question.
No, thank you for your you know, sharing that. I you know, my dad is Angelo, first generation Italian immigrant. And I can relate to everything you just said in many, many ways. We have a lot of similarities, more than you would know. But
I want to touch on something, though, that Tommy said. And Tommy, I want to give you a little credit, because in your book, you have to forgive yourself in several stories that you told. And one of my favorites was, you're an amazing speaker. You're invited all over the world to speak to these incredible companies, to motivate people, to influence people, to get them to change. And one of my favorite stories was you being at a conference where you're speaking, and then you're invited to dinner, and the driver's a little bit late. And this one really jumped off the book at me.
Oh, like, see,
okay, come on. And so here you are, you know, running behind, looking at your watch, you get in the car. And now that you say, you know, Italian-Irish, I see that you're standing on a curb. And that you get in the car, and as soon as the driver, in one split second, that first influence that you had on that driver made a difference, because you, unbeknownst, you don't even remember it when you said in the book, unbeknownst to you, you had snapped at him a little bit and said, he's late. Now you're late. He tried to tell his boss that, you know, he was sorry and that you had snapped at him. And you would just come off this incredible conference of speaking to these people about how to be an influencer, how to make people's lives, how to change their day and their direction. And you had to stop because it went from the driver to his boss to some people at that conference. And you had to, I'm going to let you finish that.
Yeah. It wasn't just a conference. It was actually the Hotel Emma, which is one of the nicest hotels in the country. It's in San Antonio, Texas. Gorgeous, remodeled hotel. I can go on and on about this hotel. But the GM of this hotel was a dear friend of mine, Bill. And he invited me down to speak to his whole entire staff about love and customer service and heart-led leadership and influence and the entire hotel staff, everyone. And then that night I snapped at the driver because he was late. And the next morning when I was working at the gym and I ran into Bill, he's like, hey, we got a little problem. You know, the driver said that you were a little short with him and some of the staff are really kind of questioning, you know, your sincerity of your message. And it was one of the most powerful things that have ever happened to me, because every action that we have can be a positive one or a negative one. And I had a negative influence on this driver. And of course I reached out to the driver and apologized. And of course I did all the right things to make it right, but it still is not right, you know? So it really, really challenged me that every action that we have, that we have to really choose and be intentional in how we treat people. That was a really hard moment in my life, because it, every once in a while, my wife does something that, you know, she would just be mortified if I shared with the world what I'm about to say. But, I try to be a good guy, that every once in a while you fall short.
Sure.
And, you know, you're not the husband or the father or the leader that you want to be. And my wife has a very funny way of telling me that I'm falling short. I'll show up in our bedroom and I'll go to bed and a copy of my book will be on my bed pillow.
Okay. I love it.
It's a copy of one of my books on the pillow. And her, she doesn't need to tell me. She's like, you need to read your book.
Chapter 7. Tommy, chapter 7.
Paragraph 3. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, hey, we all do it. Even when we want to be intentional, it's part of being human.
Yeah, and I think what struck me the most, and I'm sorry, Kelly, Tommy, what struck me the most about that particular story, and there were several, was I felt your struggle afterwards. I watched you go through that. The way you wrote those words to me spoke to me that every day you have that choice. You make that decision. You have that reaction. Yeah. You need to, you know, you have a decision to make on whose life we're going to influence. In a split second, you can make someone's day or change their life.
Yeah. Words are so powerful. I mean, I share a story in the book. I was like an eighth grader, ninth grader, maybe eighth grader typing class and marketing business class. And Mrs. Dezini, my typing teacher, who was old school. I was a terrible typer. I was a terrible student because I'm totally dyslexic. But she went up to me and she said, Tommy, you know, you are actually stupid and you are never going to go to college. And if I had to point one person in my entire life besides my strict Italian Catholic mother that really kind of drove me to like overcompensate and just, you know, prove the world wrong, it would be that teacher. And I think about her all the time. And she's passed and I need to forgive her as well. But no teacher to tell any kid, you know, that they're stupid. And I just think every day we have an opportunity to breathe positive words or negative words into people's lives.
Amen.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I just want to, you know, give you grace here, because as you said, we're all trying and sometimes we fall short of what our intention. But I always go back to what my intention was. But there's also something that you call it's ownership, that you do own maybe how you failed, And then I do think that there's an opportunity that we all either can continually deflect and blame and look outside of ourselves, or it's an opportunity that we can take in and really grow from. And so I have been inspired in so many ways. No one's perfect, but then it takes a lot of courage to look within and take ownership for some of those moments that maybe we're not super proud of, but then it's what you decide to do next. Mm-hmm. Which has also influenced me.
I like that. I have a great mentor named Terry Adams. I wrote about him in my second book, The Hard Led Leader. He was my first boss out of college, and he really taught me what a servant leader really looked like. And he would say, like, you know, Tommy, you know, you can make all the mistakes you want. I mean, mistakes are good. Just don't make the same mistake twice. Mm. But he had a huge influence in my life. And if I can give you the punchline, if you asked, you know, a lot of the thought leaders or leaders in the world, you know, who are the top 10, you know, communicators, you know, speakers in the world, I would probably be on that list. I mean, totally humbly speaking, that's my gift to communicate. But I wasn't always that way. I stuttered, you know, when I was in high school, I had a lisp. I was self-conscious because my academic pedigree was not at par because I'm dyslexic. And I never did any public speaking really at all, you know, growing up. And I remember when I was in this group called Up With People, which is a whole other conversation. This is worldwide kind of global leadership organization. Picture like the Peace Corps and the United Nations coming together for a youth program. And so this group traveled all over the world and did these shows called the Up With People shows. And I'm right out of college. And my first job out of college, and my job was to work for Up With People. And we were in Iowa doing a show for 3,000 or 4,000 people in a gymnasium. And Terry Adams, my boss, you know, asked me, Tommy, you know, you're going to introduce the show. You're going to get up on stage in front of 3,000 or 4,000 people, and you're going to thank the sponsors, and you're going to welcome the guests to the show, and you're going to explain people what Up With People is about building bridges among people and building, you know, bring people that are black and white and Jewish and Christian together to learn about love. And it's about a 3 or 4 minute introduction, and here are the notes. And it was my first kind of, you know, task to do this job. So I studied my notes, and that night I put my coat and tie on and I walk on stage and in front of a few thousand people about to introduce the show. My first kind of public speaking experience. I guess I was like maybe 21 years old as a college graduate. And Kelly, the spotlight came on. I've never experienced that before. Like when you're on stage, when that spotlight hits you, it just hit me. Right. All of a sudden, I was like a deer in headlights. I could not say a word. I didn't even know what city I was in, the name, let alone the sponsors. And I just sat there, like, it was like, you know, deer in headlights. I mean, literally. And I was sweating. I mean, I couldn't say a word. I froze. I totally just screwed it up. And one of the other managers backstage came on stage and rescued me and put his arm around me and said, what I think he was trying to say is welcome to people and to save me. So of course, when that episode finished and I ran off stage, I ran to the bathroom, excuse my language. I just puked my guts out. I threw up and I was bawling and crying and I just fell on the floor. And I would not leave the boys' room. I was so mortified that I just failed. And it was just all, it was my first public speaking experience. And I just was terrible at it. And Terry Adams tracks me down, my boss. And he finds me in the bathroom, laying on the floor, crawled up in a ball, crying. And he says to me, you know, we all make mistakes. Let's not make the same mistake twice. You know, you'll be okay. So we had 2 shows in Iowa before he moved to the next city. The next day, we had another show. And a few hours before the show, he says to me, Spalding, get ready. You're doing the introduction today.
No.
Are you crazy? Like, I'm going to put me back on stage? I can't. I'm
right back in the fire, baby.
There's no way that I'm going to do this.
Is this heaven? No, it's Iowa. He said to
me, Tommy, you're gonna get up on that stage, and you're going to introduce that show. And what we're going to do is we're going to go to the auditorium and we're going to put that spotlight on you. And you're going to welcome that spotlight in you. You're not going to freeze. And we're going to rehearse. Mm. And so we rehearsed it. And the show came on and I walked out and I gave, you know, the best, you know, introduction. Mm. And 25 years later, you know, I'm one of the best communicators in the world and speaking to millions of people around the planet.
Yes.
I tell you, I would not be where I'm at if Terry Adams didn't come back in that bathroom and said, get your ass up. You're going to get back on stage and you're going to make it right. And you're going to, you know, you learn your mistakes and just give, you know, that's the type of stuff that we get to do in our lives, is that we get to have that kind of influence with the actions and the words that we have at others, that they're talking about our actions and what influence we had in our lives years later because of those stories that we get to create. And I am who I am is because of all these amazing human beings that have just blessed me and served me and influenced me along the way.
Yeah, and that's why I'm glad, so glad that you shared all of these stories in this incredible book. And we've heard that phrase growing up. I mean, how many times have we heard, you can make a mistake, but don't make the same mistake twice? It seems so simple, but how important and influential was that in your life that brought you where we are here today? I mean, that is truly remarkable. Now, before we let you get out of here, Tommy, Kelly, do you want to finish?
Well, I want to comment on that, and then I want to go somewhere with you if you'll go there with me. But I think that's so powerful because there's so many people that say, "Well, I don't stand up and I don't lead. I don't speak to millions of people in the world, and so I really don't have influence." But then you hear the story of the teacher and the nun, and I mean, I could go on and on and on of your aunt, but everyone has an opportunity to influence. Mm-hmm. Every single one of us has the opportunity, the gift of influence. So I think that's really powerful for all of us just to.
You never know who's in the crowd, right? That saying, you don't know who's out there at any given time, and you're interacting with people all throughout the day.
Yeah, or but who you opened the door for, or who you said good morning to, or who you let cut in front of you at the line at the airport. I mean, you just never know.
Yeah. Kelly, I'm so glad that you chose to use those words to close out our time because, you know, a lot of people, when they look at leadership, they look at, oh, well, that person's a CEO, that person's a principal of high school, that person's a doctor, that person influences millions of people or reads their books, and I'm just a this or I'm just a that. And I'm so glad you used those words because everybody has the power of influence, and anybody can influence anybody, no matter what social, economic, what religion, what background, what faith, what, you know, economic, anything. If you have a heart for people, you can have a huge influence in the lives of others. And it's really about, if you want to love people, the only way that you can truly love people and serve people is to know people's story. Mm-hmm. And that's rule one. You know, the golden rule for me is that our job on this planet is not just to love and serve people, but to take the time to hear their story, because everyone has a story. I mean, just a few days ago, Jill and I and the kids were on the airport coming back from Florida, from our place in Florida for spring break just a couple of days ago. And we stopped at Chick-fil-A to get some food before we got our luggage. And there was a woman, an African-American woman, at the McDonald's at the airport next to the Chick-fil-A. And she's cleaning the tables and she's going around saying hello to everyone. And I said, Jill, that woman, I'm at the airport like 5 days a week because I travel so much with work. And so I've seen that woman. That woman is always saying hello, the McDonald's lady, you know, cleaning the tables and saying hello, blah, blah, blah. I said, you know, I'm going to go up there and talk to her because she's unbelievable. Like, I wish everyone loved their job. So we met Val, and I introduced Val to my wife and my kids. I said, kids, this woman loves her job. I come to the airport all the time. Daddy's here all the time. And she is cleaning these tables, saying hello, treating like the McDonald's is a five-star restaurant, getting people to sit down. I mean, she's unbelievable. We got to hear her story and what motivates her. Like, we spent some time with her, and it was just like we made her day just by hearing her story. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter what position you are, how much money you have or don't have, or what you do in life, what you don't do in life, you have an opportunity to get to know Val. You have an opportunity to get to know people in your life to hear their story. And once you hear people's story, then you can truly love them.
Mm. Tommy, this last week, I was invited, and this gentleman had invited me out. He wanted to meet me, and it was a business transaction. I knew what he wanted. He wanted something from the company, and so I avoided him. And finally, I said, okay, fine, he's not going to go away. I knew when we sat down what he was going to jump into, but before he could start
talking because I read that. I asked him immediately before he even sat down, so what's your story? And he looked at me like he was totally taken aback by me asking this question. I could tell he didn't know how to respond at first. And then he went into this whole story about his whole life. Literally, he started all the way back in childhood. I didn't even expect that. And so the power to your question, and we talked and talked and talked. We never really got to what I know he wanted to talk about it. I acknowledged it at the end, to be respectful, of course. But before he got up, he said, I just want to thank you for asking me that question. He goes, nobody has ever asked me that question before. So it was so powerful, and I just want to thank you for reminding me of that. Because it's so important.
I still get the final, so you go ahead.
You get the final.
The final. You're the boss.
This is the final. So in your book, you said, I needed to let go of some of the good in my life so I could devote to what I was truly best. And I can assume what that is by reading your book, and we all could, but I guess I want to hear from you. What is that you are truly best at?
Yeah. To love, you know, to have a heart to love others. Jill and I had this little saying in our marriage. It's kind of our motto of our family. If everything's important, then nothing is. You know, those parents that want to raise kids and this is important, this is important, this is important. So they're trying to throw 1,000 things at their kids and then they don't remember anything. But if you ask all three of our kids, you know, what's the three most important things, they'll all say to love Jesus, to love and value family, and to love and serve others. I mean, that's the three most important things. And so sometimes you have to get rid of the good to get to the great. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, instead of, you know, focusing on 1,000 things that are important, what are the three most important things?
Power of three.
And then really focus on those things to make a difference in people's lives.
Wow, thank you.
Amen.
Yeah, he has certainly been our gift of influence today. Tommy Spaulding, it's so great to have you on the show. Listen, Time for Forgiveness is just wrap it up with a big red bow in what you talked about with your mother. We've all struggled with family members, especially. Everybody can relate. And you don't have to be good at forgiveness. You just have to know how. And we can teach you how by coming to the website, taking a look at the workbook that we have put up on our website so you can get an idea if you're having trouble, if you're struggling. The freedom that you get from forgiving, and I'm sure you felt that, you know, going through the motions, because your mother, like you said, is a grandmother. And you had to learn to show your kids that, you know what, she's the most incredible grandmother in the world. And we know that couldn't have been easy for you because of everything. And trust me, when we meet in person, I will never touch your head. But it has been an honor and a privilege to have you with us today on our podcast. Thank you so much, Tommy Spaulding.
You bet.
Wow, what an exciting episode. Thank you so much for listening and for watching Time for Forgiveness. Hey, listen, visit our website at timeforforgiveness.org. And here's the great news. You can now download our workbook. Just click on the QR code. It's that simple. You can also message us on our website because we read every single message and we certainly love to help. You can also reach us on our socials on Instagram and Facebook. And you can email us again at info@timeforforgiveness.org. I'm Sean Parr for Bob and Kelly Pascuzzi. We'll see you next time on Time for Forgiveness.